The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Boston Red Sox barely survive a bad case of Alcala Hall poisoning, hanging on thanks to the familiar heroics of Aroldis Chapman. They beat the Royals by a score of 8-5. Their record will rise to 63 wins, 51 losses, 12 games over 500. Can you even believe that we've made it to this point after some points in the season where we were, you know, looking up at 500? I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Chris Filico and Mark Chikaris, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? Go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Now, before we jump into Alcala and Bayo and the other familiar faces, what hat are you wearing tonight, Mark?
I just want to give a shout out to Teton High School, Timberwolves, and my buddy is the head coach of their high school team, and just going to wish them an awesome season this year.
Very nice. Very nice. Good luck to them. Absolutely. It really is the roots of all sports. You know, it gets it started early. Those high school teams, even younger, the junior teams, that's where the seeds are planted, you know, for tomorrow's superstars for sure. I actually went to high school. I won't say with who, so as not to completely dox myself, but I did go to high school with a couple people who made it to the MLB, which is pretty cool. One of them who actually played on the Sox for a bit. Now, let's start with Alcala. Let's just get the elephant out of the room. Bayo has a gem and we can delve into what we saw from him. But Jorge Alcala, as far as I'm concerned, send this dude down. That was downright ugly. That is his fourth home run, I believe, given up in his last five appearances. And it really just seems to be more of the same at this point. He was nice when he got here. Good 15 appearances or so. Now, I don't know. This is looking like the guy that Minnesota got rid of. What do you guys think?
Yeah, in the war room, I was saying that we should DFA Alcala at this point. And, you know, it's funny. Over the weekend, I thought it was somewhat unfair after the start that Cooper Crispell had to send him down to create that roster spot. I would 100% DFA Alcala. I would bring up Cooper Crispell. And I would ride him in fits, and whoever's the hotter of the two, have him be in the rotation, put the other one in the bullpen. Either one of them cannot be worse than this guy. He's had six rough appearances now, I think, in a row. And, I mean, let's face it, this was a game where I was celebrating. I was getting ready to do this show, and I'm like, oh, my God. It went from, oh, man, we're never going to have to start even later. And then I was like, we might lose this game. So, can't have it.
Yeah, he was awful. I mean, that's what I wrote in my notes. He was awful. I mean, there's just nothing to say. Like, not throwing strikes. You know, you need to save those arms, and he didn't do it. He just didn't do it.
No. Au contraire, Mark, he did throw strikes. They just went about 480 feet over the wall.
You know, it really was a situation where the first home run, I think it was Vinny Pascantino hit it. And I said, you know what? That's okay. We've got a big run cushion. You know, you pitch to contact or whatever. That's fine. You're allowed to give up a home run. The second one, I said, all right, you're really playing with fire right now. Then he gave up, I think, a double as well. And I was like, all right, you are batting practice. This is awful. You know, when a guy doesn't have it, he doesn't have it. Jorge Alcala has not appeared to have it over his last several appearances. The reason that he's up on the roster right now and a guy like Bernardino isn't is really just a righty-lefty problem. You know, we got Steven Motz, who was a lefty, so he pushed our lefties down. Bernardino was unfortunately considered the worst lefty in the pen, which I guess by process of elimination, he was. Jorge Alcala, meanwhile, is surviving here as a righty. I think it is time to end this experiment. One thing I saw that is reassuring, I believe he actually has an option. So we can very easily send him down to AAA if we like what we've seen from him. We can work on that down in Worcester. We can bring up Cooper Criswell, who I agree with you, Chris. I would love to see him back in the rotation. And personally, it looks like the team isn't giving up on Walker Buehler. I am giving up on Walker Buehler, at least as a starter. Walker Buehler is a right-handed pitcher. If Alcala can't pitch mop up, maybe Buehler can switch his arsenal up. Maybe he can. And if a guy like him or May is going to have success as a relief pitcher, and that could maybe push us over the top in October, they can figure that out now rather than when the games really matter right up at the end. That's my idea.
Yeah, it's not a bad thought. I you know, I didn't consider Buehler, although, man, how scared I would have been if Buehler came in this game. But I mean, you know what the good thing is that we have options at this point. But at this point, Alcala just has to be the odd man out. We're playing such good baseball, and this is a game where, like, yeah, we won, and it's a game we could have lost. The old Sox probably would have lost this game, but it's still a game, and they mentioned it on the broadcast, where it's extra innings on those guys' arms, whether it's Chapman, Whitlock, that is just completely unnecessary at this point. And you have to wonder what impact they could potentially have in the middle of a playoff race, or if you make it to the dance and you're at the dance, what's the impact?
Oh, you're muted, Mark.
Yeah, exactly, Chris. I mean, there was no reason for Whitlock or Chapman to come into that game. I mean, we were on cruise control, you know. You guys saw my video. My sons and my dogs were just like, they were going mental. They were having fun time. They were like, yeah, we got this one. And then it was like 8-1, 8-5. And then you're just like, oh, my goodness. No reason for that. But I will say this, and Terry will probably hate me for this one, but you know, you look at Chapman, you look at Bregman, and you look at Garrett Crochet, the three guys that you know, the GM brought in. They made the all-star team and they're studs. Bregman had a great game. Played well. You know, Chapman's coming in. Does his job. You can't really complain about it. Deadline, meh, whatever.
Yeah, I think it's a fair assessment, Mark. I think, you know, I was up in the air about Breslow up until the trade deadline. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was down on him just because seemingly it didn't really seem like we made a real wholehearted effort. Although now there's reports coming out. And again, you have no idea how much spin is coming from the Red Sox front office. You know, who's putting this news out there where it seems like we did have some effort in trying to get guys like Joe Ryan. Although even when you read the article, it's like, did we really, we waited till the last hour. But I digress. It's working at this point, right? They've won six in a row at this point. Is it sustainable long term? I hope so. I mean, right now they're the hottest team in baseball, I think, since June 4th at this point. So it's a pretty large sample size. This team has defied so many odds, right? Like, we get rid of quote unquote what everyone or a lot of people thought was our best player in Rafael Devers. I did not, but it's besides the point. And they're better. They're better without him. It's not even questionable. And the Giants are worse with him. That's not questionable. Not saying that's all Devers' fault. It's just a harsh reality. But this team just keeps overcoming. Every time I think they're about to hit a hurdle, I'm like, this is it. This is where we go off the plateau. We're going to faceplant. We don't. Even coming out of the break, I'm like, it's last year's Sox, 4-5, giving them every reason not to invest. And we really didn't invest. And they're still winning. So it's hard to complain. Ultimately, we're going to have to wait to see what the, you know, end result is to the season. And if not making moves is going to be what puts the nail in the final, you know, coffin for us this season. But, right now it's kind of hard to get on Breslow.
Yeah. Nick, if you'd let me go real quick to get back to Chris. you know, that Cubs series, that Philly series, it's not like they laid down and died. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, they lost 2 out of 3 to the Phillies. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Cubs. They won 2 out of 3 with the Dodgers. And I don't, there's just fight. There's fight in them, right? I mean, they lost that Phillies game on a fluke. One of them, you know, with the catcher's interference. I don't know. I do think that this team has some sort of clubhouse thing going. They changed their celebration, by the way, with the airplane. I don't know what's going on with that, but to your point, I think they got something here.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is a total vibe shift in the clubhouse, which I'm hearing, and I've been hearing for a while, it sort of equates to 2013 in a lot of ways. Just a lot of guys who just love being a clubhouse and they love being a team. And one thing that I've heard is that these guys are playing with more confidence. I believe I heard Cora say this, but I think I heard it from some other outlets as well, that these guys are playing with more confidence now that they're past the deadline, just because there was so much tension there. You heard a lot of it from Durant, especially, who was like, I don't know if I'm going to be here in a couple weeks. And that's going to be one of those things that gnaws at you, especially when you love being where you are. Ultimately, this club, regardless of whether it was just lethargy and laziness or ineptitude, or whether it was a genuine belief in certain players, they did ultimately express belief in guys like Walker Buehler, Abraham Toro, Connor Wong, and now it is time for those guys to step up and ultimately prove why they still have a job. We saw a little bit of it, I would say, of Toro tonight. He got a nice hit. Toro's been okay so far, I would say. Walker Buehler needs to step it up. Connor Wong definitely needs to step it up. But I don't know. It's a great roster at the end of the day. It's a lot of guys who support each other, who feed off of each other's energy. And when you get intangibles like that, when you get X factors like that, things can happen. You know, baseball is more than just a game of raw talent.
Yeah, it's a fun team to watch. And, you know, you said something important, Nick, and I think we could even take it a step further. These players aren't only happy to play baseball. They like being Red Sox. And, you know, we've talked about it for years, the concern of players coming to Boston, right? Like, who's going to want to come and play for the Red Sox with, the culture being as poisonous as it's been, the lack of winning, the front office having the reputation that it's had, selling off players, not re-signing your good players. We had this stigma on us that was just kind of hanging over us like a dark cloud. And now we have a set of guys, a team that for the most part, they're all happy being Red Sox. Like, that's what you hear. You know, the irony is that there was only 2 players this year that I can actually think of that was reported they were not maybe happy being Red Sox. One's Vaughn Grissom, and he's not really on the Red Sox, but in the system, although we didn't trade him. And then to be fair, Rafael Devers, right? And to his credit or his defense, I guess is a better way of saying it, I could understand why he didn't want to be a Red Sox to some degree. However, in reflecting on the fact that he was the highest paid player in Red Sox history, I don't necessarily think we did enough for him not to be happy to be a Red Sox, maybe be uncomfortable being one going into the season with Bregman, and we shipped him out. But now all the rest of the guys we have are happy to be here, and it's showing up, and the results are showing with it. Because I think the last couple of years, you talk about a player like Duran, and that was something that was always attached to him. Loves being a Red Sox. We weren't winning. So who really cared at that point? So, I don't know. It's nice to have players that want to be here, are playing their best, and it's showing up in the wins column.
And Chris, to your point, I think the team is very happy that Duran did not get traded. Right. I mean, would I like Joe Ryan for Duran? You know, and that wasn't even close, whatever. Like, the Padres wanted Duran really bad, but you know, you got to give us everything at that point. But you know, to your point, the clubhouse is tight. I was listening to Rob Bradford today on WEEI when I was, bringing my son to work. And, you know, he said this clubhouse is just like super positive right now, super happy. And you can't diminish that. You really can't. They're playing great baseball right now. Five strikeouts tonight, I think that was it. And, you know, it's kind of ironic because the 2015 Royals were known for like putting the balls in play. And that's how they beat the Mets in the World Series. And it's like, but that's what people want to see. Like, it's way more exciting to even see a ground ball to shortstop, guy goes in the hole, you know, or off the wall, whatever, than just like strikeouts, 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 you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you saw that with the Royals tonight, too. You know, as Randy pointed out in chat, three errors. One by Bayo, which was just totally unacceptable, where we've been seeing this a lot, not just by Sox pitchers. Actually, I've been seeing it more in our opponents this year. How many times do we see a pitcher trying to make a play on a ball that should just be the second baseman's, should just be the catcher's, should just be, and, you know, they boot it. We actually saw that tonight with the Royals, of course. That really wasn't much of a chance at that ball, but we saw, I forget the guy's name, but a Royals reliever went for the ball, went to pick it up, went through his whole throwing motion, only to realize he didn't have the ball in his hand at all. You know, it happened.
Yes, yes, that was bad. I think he did it for like comedy's sake because it was
muscle memory, honestly. You know, I think he just like already had the motion all charged up. And he goes through it and he goes, well, all right, that was lighter than I thought it was. We saw Duran boot the ball out in left field. Just a ridiculous comedy of errors that whole inning. And I'm like, oh, of course Duran would, you know, after making that amazing, like, ballerina play, you know, he looks like something that would be posed in a music box just to go up to left field, up to the warning track and catch that. And then later on, he would make a terrible boot where it looked like the ball had like a little remote control engine in it. It was rolling around, had a life of its own. It was unbelievable. But, you know, you got to play good fundamentals. But also, you're kind of forcing a team to play good fundamentals when you're putting the ball in play. The Royals did that tonight. The Red Sox have been doing that all year. I believe we are leading the league right now in extra base hits. We love to get doubles. We love to get triples. And ultimately, so long as you're pairing that with solid pitching, which we've been, and good on base, which, thanks to Roman Anthony in part, we've been. I mean, yeah, you're going to win a lot of ball games.
Yeah, it's, you know, both of you made great points. You know, Mark, you're saying, you know, get the ball in play, which you also touched on too, Nick, but then also getting that good pitching. And I think the key moments to this game were when we were up 2-0, and, you know, you have, I believe it was first and third or second and third, no outs at that point. I think it was first and third. And you're like, all right, we just got to at least get that guy on third home. And we had some pretty pitiful at-bats from that point of, like, Trevor Story.
Two pop-ups, I believe, Chris.
Yeah, we had a pop-up. I mean, they were swinging at balls at their ankles. And even Duran, the first pitch, there was one down, like, at his shoelaces that he swung at. I'm like, oh, here we go. They're not going to get this third run in. And, you know, we talked about, like, nothing bad can really happen if you put the ball in play. It's the worst that happens. They catch it. But if you're swinging it and miss, I guarantee you something bad is going to happen. So, you know, he ends up hitting that three-run homer, which, I mean, think about how important that is with the way this game ended, right? So that was a crucial moment. And then we had Bayo, bases loaded, no outs, or one out, gets out of it. And then the next inning, second and third, no outs, and gets out of it with only giving up one run. So, I mean, this game should have been a blowout, but it had its moments, and those were moments where this team – in the beginning of this year and even coming back out of the break, just, you know, folded like a deck of cards. So it was encouraging to see them be able to come up with the big hit, get out of those, you know, dicey moments as a pitching staff, specifically Bayo, who was very important for his psyche. And I mean, it's just, it's fun to watch. It's hard to put it into words at this point.
Yeah, and let's talk about Bayo a little bit. I mean, this dude is ridiculous. 19 starts, 20 games total. I think he had an opener one of those games. 3.03 ERA. Absolutely stunning. I know the FIP isn't quite as good. His strikeouts this year are down. But what I noticed from looking at his Savant page is over the past 3 years, He seems to have reinvented himself a bit. The past 2 years, 23 and 24, he was really badly plagued by hard hit balls. This year, his hard hit percentage went from the 29th percentile last year up to the 75th percentile this year. Apparently, you know, he's been working on that sweeper. This year, he's also introduced a cutter into his rotation, which he now has 6 pitches, apparently. There's one slider here that might just be honestly a sweeper that got away from him, maybe. So call it 5 pitches in his arsenal. And that cutter, I think, may have a real bit of importance. It can really jam a guy up.
I think I put this, you know, in our personal messages, like, the one thing that kills me about Bayo is the nibbling. And it's, you know, you're up 5 runs and then you're up 6 runs and it just seems like he's going deep into counts. And I'm nitpicking here, everyone. I will totally admit it. He pitched a great game. He got out of a lot of jams, but like, that just bothers me. It's just like the little bit of nitpicking, you know, it's like, it was like watching like Dice K back in like, you know, back in the day. That was, it's brutal. It's like, dude, just throw a strike. But no, he pitched well today. You know, I'm being a jerk.
No, I mean, it's a fair point. Cause it is frustrating to see, especially when you have that much of a lead. It's like, dude, just throw some strikes. Like, what's the worst that happens? You're up 8 runs. It's not like bases are loaded and you're only up by 2 or 3 runs. But, you know, Randy had a good point, too. Like, the bullpen ERA since June 27th is MLB best, 2.02. And that's despite today's absolute atrocity from the bullpen. So, I mean, just kudos to this bullpen. Because I think, especially the beginning of this year and then, you know, coming into this year, I didn't think much of the bullpen. I don't think any of us thought that. I didn't think Chapman was a bad signing. But I didn't think it was going to be this, where he was going to reinvent himself and become the best closer in baseball for pretty much the whole year.
Yeah, he's been awesome.
I mean, in Whitlock, let's face it. We knew he had the stuff, but he has been so shaky the last couple of years, coming on and off from injury and then rehab starts. And then he's right back on the IL. And then it takes him a while to get back in this groove. But meanwhile, the season's over by that point. So who really cares? And it's very encouraging to see them kind of put it all together. Yeah, there's still blips on the radar. You still have these Alcala starts where I should say these moments where you're like, oh my God, and you just want to like, you know, cover your face with a pillow, but it could be worse.
Yeah, I just, sure. Nick, give me 1 second. I just want to give a shout out to Jules Mathern, who said Erod nibbled, hated it. Yeah, he did. He was a nibbler.
And you know what's funny about that comparison, too, is during the game, I was sort of looking at what Bayo has done over the course of his career so far. And I the first comparison I came up with is he's having a very Erod-like career. You know, honestly, you look at the numbers and you're like, yeah, this dude's kind of an Erod. It's interesting. You know, the guy doesn't strike out a lot of guys. I think that it's strange because he has the stuff to do it, you'd think. But ultimately, Bayo is at his best when he is pitching to weak contact. He's got a great ground ball rate, always really has. This year, he's been jamming guys, inducing a lot of weak ground outs, which is massive. I think tonight, we saw Wilson and Whitlock both come out to try to put out Alcala's fire, and both of them struggled to do it. Really, you could say that neither of them managed to do it, because really the final out was a gift by, I believe, guy's name is it Kenny Lofton is the hitter. There's a pitcher Lofton as well. And no, this is Nick Lofton. Excuse me. I got them backwards. So Nick Lofton rounded third base, coming home, running through a stop sign from the third base coach, which is really interesting. And that's the type of thing I think that probably gets you DFA'd if you're not a really important player. It at least gets you benched, because it's not like it's a one-run game. Right. You're still down by 3. Vinny Pascantino is the next one to come to the plate, who has a lot of pop, as we would see. You know, the guy is very, very good, you know. So to gift an out when a team is really doing its best to shoot itself in the foot, as Alcala and then Duran's error and all of this, I think the problem, honestly, with Wilson and Whitlock, I think for them, the script was in. Neither of them were mentally prepared to pitch today. They were kicking back. They said, they're not going to need us. We're the high leverage guys. I think the script was in. Alcala was going to pitch that inning. Weissert would probably get the next one. And, you know, Wilson, Whitlock, and Chapman were kicking off, you know, on a vacation mentally. So that's why you sort of see Wilson come out. He gave up two hits, got pulled. Whitlock comes out, gives up a walk and a hit. And, you know, I was thinking about that Lofton out, him running around third base, and Willy Abreu just completely gunning him down. And part of me, as silly as this is, I almost wonder, did he forget that Willy Abreu was out in right field? Because it was supposed to be Roman Anthony, who was scratched from the lineup card at the very last second Willy Abreu was put in. Did Lofton in his own head think, oh, there's a rookie out there, I'm going to challenge him on this, forgetting that it was a Gold Glover with a cannon for an arm? That's the only thing that would even make sense, because otherwise it makes no sense to try to run on him.
Yeah, especially, I mean, you're down, what, 3 runs at that point? You know, if you're down a run and you were down 8-1, I could see you taking the chance. Heck, if you're down 2 and you figure if I score, the other guy's going to get to third, a wild pitch ties the game, totally get it. But down 3, when you're still going to be down by 2, even if you do score, like, the bases should have been loaded there. And at that point, you basically, to your what you were saying, is two guys came in to clean up the mess and couldn't. You know, they had us on the ropes, and they allowed us to get off it, thank God. Willy Abreu has an absolute hose out there in right field. And, I mean, just gunned him down. And I'll tell you, what was an even scarier moment than, you know, seeing if he was going to get him out was when we came back from that break real quick, and they're like, they're challenging the play. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Catcher interference. They're going to let the run score, and this is going to unravel. It didn't happen, but I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he forgot at this point, but it was a bad play. It worked out for us. I couldn't be happier, and couldn't be happier that Jock Peterson just tied this game against the Yankees. It is now 5-5.
Nice. That's awesome. Real quick, Willy Abreu, right fielder, absolute cannon. When I was growing up, Dwight Evans was my boy. Like, and I remember seeing him hose a guy down in the Oakland Coliseum. And I was probably like 11 years old. And he just, you know, it was kind of like he was moving to his right, got it through. On the line to third base. But Willy Abreu can do that. He can do it too. It's amazing. I love seeing Willy Abreu play. And he's got a sweet swing. If he can put just general contact together with that swing, with the tools he has, he's going to be a 5-tool player. I if he develops, and I'm sorry, I'm ignorant on this. I don't know how old he is, but like, he's close to being like kind of a superstar player. I have to say it.
Oh, definitely. He was just born on June 24th, 26 years ago. So he just turned 26. He's got an 800 OPS, and he's been showing a little more discipline. And I think tonight was a really great game for him, because he was slotted into that third spot in the lineup last second against a lefty. Cora didn't jumble it around at all, said, you know what, go out there. And I know that, you know, Falter and Clark and Long and Zerpa, these aren't like the big names. Clark is all right, but these aren't the big names. Beating up on Falter, you know, he's not a top tier lefty, but a lefty's a lefty at the end of the day. And Willy Abreu, 2 hits, a walk, a nice approach. And I agree with you, Mark. If either a little more patience or a little more contact, if he focuses a little bit more on maybe just the situational baseball, which I would say over the last week or two, he's been doing from what I've seen. I mean, the guy's just elite. I love having him in right field. He plays it so, so well. Easily, I would say probably the best right fielder just defensively that we've had since Mookie Betts out there. I don't think that's unfair to say.
Agreed.
He also just missed, it was either a 2 or 3 run home run today that went like dead center to the triangle.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was gone.
Even a little bit, that thing was gone.
And not to mention in the Twin Series, right? He was robbed of a home run by Harrison Bader. So
yeah,
he's gotten a little unlucky, no doubt about it. Speaking of luck, I mean, Whitlock, let me say this. Luck goes both ways, right? Because as lucky as we are that Lofton made that bad play and got thrown out at home plate, what was that ball on Jonathan India? That was a beautiful strikeout at the top of the zone to end the inning. And instead, it brought up Bobby Witt to the plate. The ump really, really messed with Whitlock on that one. So I do have to give him a bit of a shout out there.
Well, the ump came up to him after, too.
And
really? Yeah, they were showing. He actually went up to him and said, I missed that call.
Oh,
and
man.
Then Whitlock apologized to him because I think he gave him a look. He didn't really freak out, but he gave him kind of a look. And the ump even said, like, no, it's okay.
That's good. That's good. I like to see that, honestly. Hey, you have to have some humility up there, you know?
Well, the Connor Wong strikeout, too. There was one Connor Wong struck out on a ball that was, man, that was low to me. I mean, that might have just caught it. And, you know, poor Connor. He just needs every break he can get at this point. He did not get that break, so whatever.
That was one of those pitches that I think I saw it, and I'm like, Connor, I understand why you're not swinging at that, but you sort of have to, because unfortunately, a batter's reputation is going to sometimes influence what the ump calls it. Connor Wong is not going to get any borderline calls. I think if that same exact pitch was given to Roman Anthony, it probably would have been a walk.
It's true. Yeah, he to be fair, he doesn't deserve any benefit of the doubt. I mean, when you're batting what seems like 120 all season with two RBIs that literally came on pop flies, I mean, you're definitely not going to get the benefit of the doubt.
It's a shame because he had that beautiful sack fly, you know, in just last night, I think. Beautiful
His third RBI of the year?
His second, I think. It's ridiculous.
Second, okay.
It was hit very well, though. I'll give him that. Like, you know, it was a nice deep sack fly to the warning track, at least. It wasn't a dinky little thing. But no, you know, it's a shame that today the bullpen got wasted because it really felt like so unnecessary. Like this was just going to be, like I said, an Alcala Weissert script. Fortunately, we do have a Crochet start right around the corner. Hopefully the offense can put something together and figure that out. Because at the end of the day, this Royals team, they're feisty. They've won, I think, four series straight, including taking one off the Cubs. They absolutely shelled the Cubs. I think they put up 12 runs in one win, eight in another, which, I mean, we saw firsthand how good that Cubs team is. This Royals offense is sneaky good, and they made a couple additions at the deadline that really can help their lineup, and we sort of saw some of that today in Frazier and Yastr Zemsky. I mean, Mike has always, it's kind of funny, this dude has always hit well in Fenway. And I tweeted out, is this like some genetic memory thing? In only like six games or something, he's slugging. He must be like 700-800 slugging just in Fenway. I always wanted him, you know, but obviously this year especially, we had nowhere to put him. But I thought that was a really nice addition that they made to that lineup. You don't want to sleep on these guys. Bobby Witt, Vinny Pascantino, Mikael Garcia's great, Perez, you know, that's a fun, feisty lineup. And when I saw Alcala giving them an opportunity, I said, you've got to shut this down because this is a team who can put up seven runs in one frame pretty easily. And they got close to doing that, I would say.
Yeah, they're a team that knows how to keep the lineup moving. You know, there's not too many guys on their team that really scare you from a power standpoint, but they could all get on base. They're good at drawing walks. And then once they're on the bases, they wreak havoc as a team. And it's all led by Bobby Witt Jr. So, I mean, it's credit to them because to your point, they're a team that could put a crooked number on you pretty quickly and in the blink of an eye out of nowhere when you're not expecting it. So you got to keep your foot on the gas with this team. I think, you know, with the Crochet start coming tomorrow, I feel good about it. And it's one, if we're going to win this series, which I would expect us to, they have to take tomorrow because there is no way in hell we want to be relying on Dustin May to take on Michael Wacha in Fenway Park to have to salvage this series.
Yeah, totally, Chris. I mean, you got to win tomorrow. For all the reasons you outlined, right? Crochet on the mound, get it done, win the series. You know, sweeping teams is great, but like, it's not going to happen all the time. The Kansas City Royals are a good baseball team. They have great players. Bobby Witt, possibly the best all-around player in the league. I mean, for everything he does. Nick, to your point, it's so funny with Mike Yastrzemski. I'm the same on this one. It's like, yeah, you know, sentimentality, you kind of want him on the team. Nowhere to put him, but he comes in here and he just crushed. I think he's only hitting like 228, I think I saw. But it seems like every time he comes into Fenway, it's just like a disaster for the Red Sox. You know, but obviously he was kind of brought up here, so he knows, he's been around. And you know, that's just a nostalgia thing, but you know, the Royals are good. You can't sleep on them, and they're only three games out of a wild card spot here. So you're battling them. You're battling them. They're your competition.
Most definitely. I would say that the Royals were a team that pre-deadline, I was almost expecting to sell. I almost expected that they were out of the race. And then they really made themselves into a formidable contender by making a couple of really good trades, one of which was they sent catcher Freddie Freeman over to the Padres, who's a nice player, no doubt, but he was older than I thought he was. I think he's already 31. He's been apparently with the Royals a lot longer than I realized. And they managed to get two starting pitchers from the Padres in return, one of whom we're going to be facing tomorrow. That is, however, something we can hopefully capitalize on, just like we did tonight. The Royals have been battered by injuries, especially at starting pitching. Chris Bubich, unfortunately, out for the season. Cole Ragans, I believe, may be out for the season as well. So right now, their rotation is just Lugo, Waka, and three guys that just got here like 5 days ago. One of them was Bailey Falter. We saw how that went. Tomorrow is going to be Ryan Burgert. Not too much information on him. I believe he's a rookie this year, 25 years old. Looks good. I mean, 7 starts, 11 games, 35.2 innings pitched, a 2.78 ERA. You look under the hood, he has a walk problem. Hopefully we can take some advantage of that. But he's very good at nullifying hard hit balls so far. Throws a four-seamer at about 95 miles per hour, it looks like. Or actually about 94, so not great velocity necessarily, but has a wide arsenal with a slider and a sweeper too. That'll be a game that we kind of have to win, you know, without question. Because like you said, Chris, Michael Wacha, let's not sleep on this guy. He reinvented himself coming to the Red Sox, funnily enough, just about 3 years ago, I think it was. And ever since then, he has looked like a new guy. He's one of those rare instances of a dude who really has his best years in his 30s. He's doing very well for himself. Dustin May, I'm very much looking forward to seeing the start because I'm looking forward to seeing what the Red Sox maybe see in this guy that they can turn into something for these last 2 months. But I would really feel much more comfortable winning the series before that sort of experiment, science experiment, I guess, comes to fruition.
Yeah, it'd be great to see if we could actually make one of these pitchers from the NL West look half decent. In one of the many trades that we've made for that division. But yeah, I mean, Michael Wacha, I remember, I think it was 2023. It was 22 or 23. And I was disappointed because there was rumors they were going to re-sign him. I think he was on a one-year deal. And he had a hell of a season for us. He was probably like one of the only bright spots of that rotation that year. Completely reinvented himself and was like kind of a bona fide ace for us, as pitiful as that may sound. But yeah, we have to win the crochet start. You know, it's funny, Burgert or whatever his name is, forgive me for pronouncing it the way I did.
Berger.
Yeah, Berger. I'll say Berger. Berger reminds me a lot of, you know, looking at his stats, the fact that he's only 1-0 in 7 starts. Reminds me of Fitz. I remember it took us forever to get Fitz his first win this season, even though his ERA was relatively low and had some decent numbers, which this guy seems to have. So he could be sneaky good, but again, you know, it's been a while since we had a moment where we're like, this is a crochet start. We have to win this start. Like, not have to because we should, but have to because we literally have to and need it. I thank God we have been in that position, but it would be nice for him to kind of get back on the horse to the point where it's like, okay, we're getting those automatic wins with him and everyone else is firing.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, you got to win this series and you got to win it tomorrow. That's the bottom line. Repeating myself now, Kansas City Royals are good. Win the series. That's it. Crochet's going. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your guys' predictions? Probably a 1-1. I think we're all going to say probably on this. We win the crochet start. We lose the May start. That's my opinion.
Go ahead, Chris.
All right. Yeah, I think we win the crochet start. You know what? If we win the crochet start, I actually do think we will be pleasantly surprised with Dustin May. One, we won't need the series. Not, we won't need the game to win the series. And I think the fact that we will break the streak that the Royals are on, which I think it's 7 series in a row that they've won now.
Wow.
On the road. Or it's like something weird like that. So if we get that, it's a lot of pressure off him. I think he'll surprise. If we need him to win, there's absolutely no way. I don't see it.
Yeah, I think tomorrow's game is going to be a close game because ultimately the score doesn't really reflect it, but the Red Sox kicked their butts today. I mean, they really did. I mean, you know, you were up 8-1 or 8-2 at one point. Like, you know, their offense was clicking early and that was it. I think tomorrow the Royals are going to come in. They're going to be focused. They're going to be like, let's go, you know, crochet on the mound. He's got to bring it. And, you know, if they win tomorrow, to your point, Chris, May can just like breathe a little bit, you know what I mean? And just do his start. And no pressure on winning the series or, trying to be a super stud at this particular time.
I also think the crowd will be a lot different. The crowd's going to treat him much differently if we've already won the series than if it's a start where we need it. And I think being able to get behind him would do wonders for him.
Definitely. I can absolutely see that being the case. You know, it'll be interesting tomorrow because we will be without Roman Anthony for one more game, we heard. He is going to sit tomorrow, but the injury fortunately doesn't seem to be an issue. It was some middle back tightness, something like that. That's one of those things that sort of sits in the back of my mind. I'm always like, whenever a young guy especially has a back problem, I'm like, ooh, that's the type of thing that's going to haunt you. You know, I know guys like Mitch Moreland, JD Martinez, it would just kick in sometimes. And they're like, oh, here I go again. You know, I'm going to have to sit for a week. Not something to really be too concerned about necessarily, but something to keep an eye on with Anthony for sure. And I am glad that they're sort of taking precautions with that and saying, you know what, you're feeling tight today. Let's just, you know, get you in the back, you know, get the rolling pin out pretty much and just try to make sure that you're fresh for Wednesday. So, you know, tomorrow we have a right-handed pitcher in Burgert who hopefully we will see Abreu, Yoshida, Duran do what they do. Really, fingers crossed here. I mean, no cause for concern for me from this team. I mean, you can't get cocky, but we're good. Just keep on finding ways to win ball games. That's what you got to focus on. And I think that these guys are capable of doing exactly that.
Yeah, agreed. We're in a good spot. We just got to keep it. I said it yesterday in the war room. If we can just play 650, 700 baseball, which it sounds like it's a lot, but I mean, it's essentially just win more series than you don't, right? From here on out, and we're going to be in a good spot, and we're going to be playing October baseball almost certainly, especially with the way the outlook is with the rest of the teams. And who knows, you might even challenge for a division.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you got some couple of tough games coming up with the Padres and the Astros who are going to want revenge. They're going to be, I think that's going to be a series. Like, I think there's going to be some contention there. Especially after the, of all teams, the Astros, you know, stole our signs. Like, okay, all right, well, we're not even going to go there. But to your point, Chris, just win the series. And that's my final thought on this.
Yeah. Fortunately, when you look at the Red Sox's strength of schedule right now, it is actually down to 500, pretty even. That being said, there are a lot of really good teams on there who I do think can challenge us. Obviously, I think the Tigers and the Blue Jays are the last two series of the season, which seem like they could be very decisive. Three more games against the Astros. I don't think you beat a team like that 6-0. People say, oh, well, we swept them. Seeing each other so close to one another, it's hard to do. It's hard to go 3-0 against a team. It's even harder to go 6-0 against a team. That's sort of my logic with the Yankees, too. Oh, well, we've beaten them 5 times out of 6. Yeah, and we're playing them 7 more times. A lot of stuff can happen, especially when you're seeing the same faces, the same arms, especially in a short period of time. Even some of the bad teams that we're playing, quote unquote bad teams, the Orioles, 6 games against the Orioles. They've been playing much better baseball over the past 2 months, sorted out a lot of their pitching woes. We got 3 games against the Marlins, who, aside from us, are one of the hottest teams in baseball. They just swept the Yankees. These teams are not going to go down easy. So I am preparing myself for, like, this is going to be bumpy, you know, and everyone should be prepared for that, but not in like a pessimistic way, just in a way where you have to, like I said, just show up and play good baseball. These aren't free wins. There's really no such thing in the sport. And far from it in a lot of these teams' cases. These are good pitchers and good hitters. We've got to play our best version of ourselves every day.
I think it's going to be a good test. You know, to your point, it's not a reason to get pessimistic or get down. It's really an opportunity just to have a good measuring stick of where this team is, because it's not going to be an easy road going forward. I mean, a record may say it's 500, but like you said, there's some good back-to-back matchups. And to be fair, the Sox actually have fared well in that. Like, I think about the Yankees early this season, we kind of played them 2 weekends in a row, very close to each other, took 2 out of 3 and then swept them. So you have to hope that maybe we can kind of do the same thing with the Astros. And then I have a feeling we're probably gonna be in a similar situation again with the Yankees. I think we play them pretty close to one another going down the stretch. I will be going to one of those September games. So let's hope.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, two last notes just before we sign off here. One is one right-hander that we sort of forgot about is the potential return of Justin Slayton. Hopefully in a month, we will see him take Alcala's spot. Hopefully someone else will take Alcala's spot in the meantime, like we proposed. But I mean, just
anyone else.
Justin Slayton is kind of that dude. He's a great pitcher, high leverage guy for us earlier in the season. That was a big loss. And we're fortunate to see Whitlock and Wilson step up like they have to help reinforce that top end. So it's not just Chapman, but I mean, the bullpen overall has been excellent. You add a guy like Slayton to it. You add a guy like Matz, who I think Matz is one of those dudes, and the Yankees did just lose, by the way. Matz is kind of one of those dudes where, you know, his name is going to be said sarcastically almost with air quotes around it, because unfortunately, his name is synonymous with the trade deadline, which was ultimately limp. Oh, we got Steven Matz, right? But at the end of the day, he's got good stuff. And even though I was sorry to see Bernie go, I'm not necessarily missing him. And it's not like he's gone. He's just down in AAA being depth. You can't have too many good pitchers at the end of the day. So I do really like that. With that Yankees loss, where I was hoping that we would get a result from that before we ended the show, I believe that means they're going to be, what is it? I think two games down in the standings,
yeah,
from us?
It's two, because they'll have 2 more losses and we'll have 2 more wins.
That's right. Really, really good.
Yep.
You know, the Blue Jays are winning big, of course, versus Colorado. Hopefully Colorado can upset them somewhere along the way. But one other thing I just wanted to note on Dustin May, complete literal surface level examination of him. He kind of looks like if Chris Sale and Craig Kimbrell fused together. Yeah. I heard them calling him Big Red. I looked at him because he looked like a real thin guy. He is billed at 6'6 and 180, which is exactly what Chris Sale was back when he pitched for us. He might still be, for all I know. But he's got kind of that scarecrow frame. Love those long arms. I imagine his extension is very good, at the very least. Fingers crossed that he can duel Waka and really just give us four good innings, because with a day off Thursday and a crochet day tomorrow, hopefully we'll have guys like Whitlock, Chapman, maybe Murphy, you know, guys who are ready to give you two innings. You know, you never know. But yeah, this will be really interesting. So any closing thoughts?
It's actually 2.5 against the Yankees. We're 3 ahead in the wins and 2 in the loss.
Wonderful. I mean, it just keep on adding to that, because I saw the other day when we passed them in the standings, it was the first time we had done so since the Yankees passed us on opening day, winning their game when we lost. So, you know, their free fall has been really beautiful to watch. We just got to take advantage of it.
They were up on us, what, 10 games at one point? Yeah.
Just one final thought from me is that just loved seeing the Red Sox tonight put the ball in play, have great at bats. You know, even the other day when they were bunting, and it's just like, you know, making people uncomfortable, changing it up, you know, getting things that make other players uncomfortable, whether it's hitting the opposite way, bunting. That meant a lot to me today. It was just so good, because I always keep track of the strikeouts for the Red Sox, and it was only 5 today. And honestly, like maybe 3, because I think there were 2 questionable calls. Put the ball in play, make the other team make the plays. That's my final thought.
Absolutely. And stealing as well, actually. We didn't even mention that.
Yep, exactly.
At Codified Baseball, who tweets out a lot of great stats, he tweeted out that the Royals are leading the league in stolen bases allowed. They've only allowed 31 stolen bases coming into this game. Trevor Story's been a sneaky speedster, 19-0 in terms of stolen bases to caught stealing, which I believe I heard he's one away from a franchise record. If he gets 20 uncontested, I think he'll tie the franchise record, which is really exciting.
And one of his stolen bases led to a run today.
Yeah, so it's huge. It's exactly like you say. You
mix
know,
it up. Mix it up,
small
baby.
Ball
love
stuff,
it. Yep.
You know, it might be outdated in some people's eyes, and it might be outdated in a macro level. Like if you play every game in every inning like small ball, I think that approach is long and dead. But there is still a lot of good reasons for it. As we've been seeing, the ability to drop a bunt, steal a base goes a long way.
Absolutely.
All righty. So with that, we'll wrap up the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening in and joining us. I've been Nick the Voice, joined by Mark and Chris. We had a great one today, a little bit of a scary one. But, I mean, just kudos to Bayo. Kudos to really the entire offense. These guys just keep getting it done. Hopefully we can go out and win the series tomorrow. Thank you, everyone. We have been the Bastards of Boston. You have been wonderful. Take care.